Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the role of interesting person is being played by Rob Canope. Rob's mission is to help companies avoid becoming the next Sears by modernizing what companies do from a sales and marketing perspective. Think less cold calling, blast emailing, and gut-based decision-making, and more data-driven decision-making, more digital, more mobile, and more social media. So, Rob, welcome.
Thanks, Dee. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thank you for your patience as I went through about two or three attempts at getting through that beginning, but we got it. We're set.
I wasn't going to say anything. You outed yourself, buddy.
You know, you just gotta own your mistakes, and then nobody else can pick on you for them. But the one thing I will get right from the very beginning is to say thank you to our sponsor today. Urban Renewal Brewery has kindly supplied me a beverage to drink. I am going through their Schwartz Weather, which is their aptly titled Schwartz beer. So their black lager, and it's delicious. So Urban Renewal, thank you for sponsoring our conversation today. And Rob, here's the question that I want to get started with. We're recording this in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. Many of us have been sheltering in place for weeks, if not months. The world, whenever we do get back to a semblance of normality, it will be a very different normal. What has all of this illustrated about the gaps in how we were selling and marketing before all this happened? Like, what has become blindingly obvious was a failing in how we were interacting before all of this?
Yeah, I think if you look at it from a company perspective, for example, I work with a lot of large organizations, and I have a lot of friends at big companies, and a lot of them were completely focused on everything but digital. Still, even in the year 2020, I'd talk with prospects that had no interest in using digital from a perspective beyond, say, email. I mean, when you talk
really
social media, yeah. When you talk about social media, it's like, yeah, that's just not something we're interested in. And to hear that in 2020, it was shocking. But nowadays, when you don't have that face to face, it's really hard, to get in front of those right people. If you're only using phone and email, the conversion numbers, I'm sure you've seen them, are incredibly low. So, if you want to really be successful, especially in the current state of the world, you have to be able to incorporate things besides email and the phone in your sales toolkit.
Right. And what's really interesting from what I've seen is that some, especially the larger organizations, are trying to pivot, but A, they're really big organizations, so they don't turn that fast. It's like turning an oil tanker. And B, digital is not just something you just show up one day and push a button for, right? You just can't just pivot to, oh yeah, we're now a completely social media conversant company. I guess the question is, what are the ways that you've seen companies successfully pivoting right now? Or, what are they doing to now embrace digital that they weren't doing before?
Yeah, I think folks are starting to utilize those channels like social media more so. I've spoken with friends of mine that are peers and yourself in particular that do a lot of training and strategy and content around social, and companies are really doing a big push from a digital perspective and around social media in particular. So it has changed them quite a bit. I look at sales strategies as well. And really that beyond digital, just from a sales perspective, so many companies have traditionally had that hunting mentality, right? It's like, what can you kill today? What can you eat today? What have you done for me lately?
Right.
And in the current state of the world, I think you got to forget hunting. You're not going to be super successful, you know, if you try to close this quarter. Not that you shouldn't try, but if you're using a hard close and really going after people and trying to challenge objections and things like that, it's just not the right time, in my opinion. So I think everyone has to shift to more of a farming mentality around planting seeds now that are going to bear fruit down the line. So I think that,
right.
I think that's a shift that a lot of companies, and I've seen some make this shift already, that they need to do at least, you know, for the next couple of quarters. You know, unfortunately, I mean, not that you can't close again, but you just have to approach it differently. It's got to be a lot more empathy, a lot more relationship building. You gotta help people out. You gotta add value. You gotta give things away. You know, think about how you can help people without selling first and foremost. I think that's the approach we've all got to take right now.
I agree with you, but let me throw a wrinkle here, because I kind of think that that's a cop out. And by the way, not from you, but from kind of the sales profession as a whole, because, you know, I've been talking about building empathy and the power of relationships for years now. And, you know, my last book, I talked all about the sales Sherpa, like the need to, as you said, provide value. Were people just not doing that before, right? Like, part of me goes, why are you being empathetic and build, you know, customer focus now? Does that mean that you weren't before, right? And I know that's not what you're saying, but do you see kind of that conflict there? Like, when you're talking to people now, that they're like, oh, I'm just going to be empathetic for a quarter or two, and then I'll go back to hunting and being high pressure. Because I would argue that I don't think we can ever go back to that, really, in an environment where social media is important, where I can go and do a quick look at your LinkedIn profile and see if you have recommendations, where if you run a restaurant, for example, I can go look at your Yelp review and decide whether or not I want to even go to your restaurant without stepping foot in it. What do you see? How do you see people wrestling with that?
Yeah, it's a great point, Dee. It's one of those things where I agree with you. You know, usually talk, I agree with you, but in this one,
you can disagree. Trust me, lots of people do.
Sure, no worries, no worries. But I think this should be your modus operandi moving forward, and probably should be already, quite frankly. You know, if you are only caring about making that sale, and then you don't talk to that person again for 11 and a half months until it's time to renew that contract, then you're not really adding any value.
Right.
Unless your product is a purple unicorn that vomits rainbows, and everyone thinks their product is.
Right.
It's not. You know, 99% of the products in the world are commoditized in some way. There's a competitor that does most of the same things that you do. So how do you add value outside of that product? That's what it's all about. And so my message has always been, you know, give things away. You know, in my career, the more I've helped people, the more I've given away knowledge, the more I've added value without asking for anything in return,
right?
The more people have wanted to work with me. And I'll give you an example. I was on a call probably 3-4 months ago, and I thought it was a networking call. I didn't realize it was a sales call.
All the best sales calls are like that, right?
Right.
You're like, oh, you want to do business? Cool. I just wanted to get to know you.
That was exactly it. So I was talking with this guy, and I was saying, hey, can I give you a few tips on your LinkedIn profile? Because I checked you out before we had this call. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. So he said, hey, I recommend you this, this. He said, wow, I never would have thought of those two things. And then we started talking. I was like, hey, and I noticed the content that you're posting. You know, most of what you're doing, for example, is third-party links. And you know, that only gets out to a certain amount of people if you do, say, text with an image or text only or video instead of third-party links. You know, you're typically on LinkedIn, that gets shown to a lot more people. So you might want to think about, you know, utilizing those strategies instead of, you know, third-party links. And I gave him, you know, 3, 4, 5 tips in the span of a half an hour. He's like, well, this sounds great. How much would it be to do this for my company?
Right.
And I had to hold back from laughing because I wasn't even thinking about sales the entire time. We were just riffing back and forth. And I think we were both from Michigan. So we were talking about that, and both lived in Southern California now. So we were talking about that and talking about kids and soccer practices and stuff like that. And suddenly,
and the differences in the weather between Michigan and Southern California.
just a little bit different, just a little bit. But yeah, so it was, it suddenly became a sales call, and I was shocked. Like, wait, I didn't ask any of my discovery questions. I need to know a lot more information before I quote you something. But let's jump into that mode. And so it was very interesting. And those types of conversations have come about quite a bit for me whenever and I think this happens a lot for people when you're not trying to do something is when you do it the best.
Absolutely. I call it networking karma. You know, when you actually just put good stuff into the universe, it always finds a way of coming back to you, usually in unexpected ways. What would you say to somebody who, you know, let's say they're in a sales role right now, because I'm 100% on board with everything you just said. And they go, well, you know what, that all sounds good. And by the way, this is a question I get a lot, so that's why I'm going to echo it back to you to see what you say. This all sounds great. And okay, yeah, I'll take this long-term approach and this relationship building approach, but I've got these responsibilities right now, right? I still have my maybe I'm in a sales organization that is not as enlightened, right? I've got my sales manager saying, hey, how is this quarter's numbers looking? What's your pipeline look like? I've got this pressure right now. How do you suggest people to balance the long-term relationship building, the cultivation and farming, with still some of that need to produce results in the near future?
Yeah, I think now is the time to reach out to your current network, your current relationships, mm-hmm. and that's where you're going to get the current deals.
Okay.
You know, if you're starting a brand new relationship with someone you've never spoken to before, it's going to be hard to close that deal in the next couple of quarters.
Right.
But if it's someone that you've known for a while, or you've known the company for a while, maybe you've even worked with them in the past, maybe you volunteer at the same location, you've got those existing relationships. And, you know, I'm in my 40s. I have thousands and thousands of those relationships.
Right.
Just go back to those individuals and start a conversation. You know, don't immediately start jumping into a sales pitch, but just reach out and ask how you're doing. I mean, that's what I've been doing on my, if you want to call them, you know, sales outreach components on LinkedIn and emails. I'm just trying to find out how people are doing. You know, if it leads to a sale, great. If it doesn't, but I want to know the people that I care about, and I always care about my clients. That's, you know, something that, you know, I hang my hat on. I want to make sure that they're doing okay first and foremost. And so start with that, and start with those people, those relationships. And I think I've got, you know, 3,000 plus connections on LinkedIn. So if I went through just each one of those people and reached out to each one, I guarantee I would get 100 sales of those 3,000 just in the people.
Right. No, that I love that. It's interesting because you, like me, you know, we're on LinkedIn pretty regularly. With, in the midst of this pandemic, every salesperson who's all of a sudden prevented from going out into the world is like, okay, now I'll take this social media thing, the social selling thing, seriously. So we have a lot more people on LinkedIn, and they're all using it poorly. Not all, 98%, right? They're like, oh, I can just send out a connection request and then pitch you. And it doesn't work very well. I had this conversation with somebody else about garbage empathy. What I call garbage empathy is just putting an empathetic statement or a sentence at the beginning of your regular cold email. You know, I hope you're doing okay, period. And then just the regular pitch. Because it is hard to start a human relationship with somebody in an environment like this, right? So cold reaching out, people are working from home, lots of stresses, all that kind of stuff. But what you said, that going to those kind of weak connections, right? People that you know, but maybe haven't talked to for a while. They might be past clients. They might just be past colleagues, employees, employers, people you haven't spoken to in 5 years. But because you have that foundation, it's so much easier to have a genuine conversation. I think that's brilliant.
Absolutely. You've already laid the groundwork. And I think that's one of the gaps. You asked earlier, what are one of the gaps that's being exposed? And I think that's one of them, is we focus so much of our time on new customer acquisition and not nearly enough time on retention. Mm-hmm. I read a stat, and I'm sure it's changed since then, but it's probably about 5 years ago, and it said it's 5 times easier to retain a current client than it is to go out and get a new client. But if you look at how, as salespeople, we spend our time, I would say it's probably 90% on acquisition and 10% on retention.
Yeah,
which makes no sense.
Right, and the acquisition time often seems kind of like we're going through the motions, right? Or, oh, I've got to call and check up on this person. Hopefully they'll buy something from me, as opposed to going back to what you said before, continuing to find ways to provide value, right? You've bought from me before, but I care about you. And hey, there's this change happening in the industry, or here's how COVID is affecting companies like yours. I just wanted to make sure that you're keeping up to date with that information. I wanted to share, right? That can be like kind of curating that content. Are you seeing that help salespeople kind of keep those conversations going?
Yeah, I think things like that could definitely help. But, you know, myself personally, sometimes I try to find people jobs. You know, I've got friends at company X that's in a VP role, and I see something on LinkedIn at company Y in a SVP role, and I say, hey, saw this, thought of you. You know, if you'd like an intro, I know the hiring manager.
Right.
Something as simple as that, out of the blue for someone. And you'd be amazed what kind of karma that gives you. You mentioned karma earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're actually reaching out, trying to help someone. It's like, wow, you know, if you're looking for advancement in your career, I know, you know, this is in your neck of the woods and it's a step up from you. You're fantastic. You do a great job at what you do. If you're interested in this, let me know. I'll see what I can do.
I love that. One thing I often do is, even if it's not about finding a job, if I am just talking to two people, it usually happens this way where I'm talking to two people in the span of about a week. And then after I talk to the second person, I just think to myself, they should know each other. Right. And I just had this happen where I was, it was two people from very disparate parts of my personal and professional network. I mean, one was somebody that I met very much in a professional networking setting. The other was the spouse of one of my wife's good friends. And I realized, wait, you're both in customer success, and thinking, you know, kind of thinking about some really interesting things kind of on the cutting edge of that. And so I was like, you two should talk. And only then does one of them point out that they live in the same town, the same suburb of Chicago. And usually they'd be able to get together at Starbucks. Of course, now they have to do a Zoom call. But I was like, and I don't have to do anything. And not that I did this, as you said, to get anything back. Like, I just wanted to give. But that's good juju to put out into the world, right? And my guess is it'll probably come back in some positive way in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you mentioned that they're both in the same line of work. I think for so long, we've been told, hey, you know, don't talk to your competitors. Don't give away your secret sauce. And I think it's the opposite. I mean, you and I do very similar things, Dave. I mean, so
right.
10 years ago, people would be telling us, oh, don't talk to each other because, you know, D's going to try to steal those from you, or Rob will try to steal those from you. Like, well, the way I look at it is everyone's a potential partner.
Right.
When you look at the world that way, it gets so much bigger. I have so many folks in my network that do exactly what I do. And if I can't handle a project because my bandwidth is too low at my company, I want five names to be at the top of my head to be able to say, look, call these five people. They'll do a fantastic job for you. Or if it's you know, something similar to what we do, but it's not, like, for example, we don't do social media on behalf of your company, for example. But I get that request from time to time. So I've got people that I send those inquiries to. I've just got a list of folks, and I'll just pick, you know, three or four randomly, depending on what the criteria are. It happened a couple of weeks ago. Someone was reaching out to me for a new medical device company that was launching in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted marketing folks that, you know, specialize in medical if they did have that kind of experience. And they wanted people that were really good with things like social media, because as we know now, the, you know, digital is king. I know two folks in particular that focus on medical, and I know one in particular that's fantastic at social as well. Beyond that, the other two are good too. So here you go. Here's your three names. Done and done. I didn't have bandwidth. So I was like, here you go. Here are three people.
Yeah, I love that. And it's also really interesting because you're right. 10 years ago, there was this idea of being really guarded around people that are competitors. And as you were saying, you know, that you know a lot of people in the same line of work. I mean, I've got a ton of friends who do, whether it's sales training or sales coaching or social selling training, however you want to chop and dice it. And I'm like, I if they called me up and had a question for me, I'd be like, hey, here's my decks. because it's not about the information anymore. Or let me say, it's not just about the information, right? Anything that I have in an article or a book on how to use LinkedIn, there's 100 LinkedIn books out there. Half of them are not that good, but the other half are decent. And, you know, I'd like to think that I'm on the top, but I don't have the secret, right? And so once you realize it's not just about giving the client the information, but really about helping them process that, right? You know, and actually adopt it and go through a change process, it allows you to realize, oh no, I can, you know, be collaborative in this as opposed to just, you know, kind of have my little fief and go, no, I can't talk to Rob. He might try to hone in on my business. It's like, hey, Rob, and you and I actually work with similar, but not the same types of clients. So even that has, and I hate this word, but some synergy to it, right?
Yeah, it's not about being the smartest person in the room. It's about typically who's the best communicator, who's the person that can explain it in the easiest way, who can develop a rapport with the target audience, and who can solve their pain points the best and add the most value.
Yep.
You know, being the smartest person in the room or having the best mousetrap isn't a key to success in many areas.
Yeah, exactly. And to that point of being the best able to communicate it, one thing I've actually found with my network is I get asked for referrals in the way that you just mentioned as well. I'll often go, well, I have two people that are just as skillful, but I know that this person is going to be more congruent with what the client would need, right? Or just they're culturally a better fit. You know, this person might be a little more straight-laced. This person might have pink hair, you know, and go, okay, so this would probably be the right referral here. This would be the right referral over there. And so it's also, I think, this idea of not just having the information and but being able to really connect with the client where they're at, right? And so each of us kind of has our personalities, our sweet spot. There's more than just, hey, I can come deliver some information.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's a wonderful way for us to have a completely non-smooth segue. I want to talk about beer with you because I think we are in alignment with our social selling focus. We also, I think, are in alignment with our beer. What beers are you drinking these days? What's exciting to you?
Yeah, so I'm a dark beer guy. So typically the stouts, the porters. You know, I feel like I should have grown up in England or Ireland or Germany, something like that. A lot of European stuff is what I really enjoy. I don't understand the IPA craze. I just don't. I'll go to a bar and they'll have
preach, brother, preach.
Yeah. 30 beers on tap and 20 of the 30 are different kinds of IPA. I'm like, these all taste exactly the same. I have no difference. And maybe my taste buds are just shot for some reason. But I'm not a huge fan, but I do really enjoy a dark beer. Probably my favorite's something called Rogue. It's the company that makes it. A hazelnut brown nectar. It's a brown ale.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, kind of sweet, a little dark. Really, really good stuff there.
Very cool. So what is it like to live in California, the home of the hoppy IPA? I mean, that's really where the craft brewing world in the United States it's one of the places where it really got its start. And it really kind of came from that IPA style. Like, are you kind of a pariah out there? Do you just go in and have like that one stout or that one porter that's on the menu?
9 times out of 10, that's the way it is. They'll have a list of, you know, 15 beers, 10 will be IPAs, a couple of Pilsners, maybe one dark beer, and, you know, who knows what the other ones are. You know, probably some kind of seltzer or something like that.
But right.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Michigan. And when I go home, I like it much, much better from a beer perspective because you go to a bar and two or three or four of the selections are dark beers. And there's breweries in my hometown of Bay City, Michigan that make really good dark beer. And so I enjoy going back to Michigan quite a bit. It's easy for my family to find pretty much anything that I want and some really, really good stuff, even at the local supermarket. It's not even like a specialty beer store like I have to go out to here. Just any, you know, Kroger, and you'll be able to find whatever you want.
Oh, that's fantastic. One thing I've seen here, and I don't know if this has happened in California yet, but over, I'd say, the last 18 months, I have actually noticed a shift in a lot of the breweries here in Chicago, where not that you're necessarily getting a lot more of the dark stuff, of the stouts and the porters. There's definitely a few more than usual, but it's opening up a lot more. You know, 3 years ago, if you'd go to a brewery, it was, you know, 80% IPA or some version thereof, right? Double IPA, triple IPA, APA, whatever it is. Whereas now there's more stouts, there's more porters. We're actually getting a lot more lagers, I've noticed. Kolsches, you know, a lot more of the German beers. Like, again, I'm drinking the Schwartz beer from Urban Renewal. And I mean, so you get like the black lagers. That's definitely been like a noticeable shift here. Is that happening out there, or is it still very much kind of the IPA land for the craft scene?
You know, out here, I'm seeing more sours pop up, actually. I'm a sour guy. I never really enjoyed sours until about 2-3 years ago, which is weird because I've always been a sucker for a good lemonade.
Okay.
I love sour fruits and foods and things like that. So, but beer never really worked for me, but, there's some that, you know, I've really found that I like from a sour perspective as well. So that's the change I'm seeing out here more than a shift to dark beers. But
interesting.
That's other ones welcome.
Okay. So you and one of our other guests, Ryan Roten, will have to gang up on me to get me to drink sours. He's out in Colorado and he's become a huge sour fan. And he's like, you got to come out and visit. And he's trying to convert me. It's not, I don't see it happening, because those sours, I mean, you know, to each their own. I mean, that being said, I was not a big IPA fan, and I've actually had a couple, you know, not the heavy IPAs, but like the just American pale ales and stuff that have been pretty tasty. So maybe I can conceive of myself sometime in the future drinking a sour, but it's going to take a while. That for sure. So are there any other breweries out in California that you really like? Or I guess any in Michigan? Are there any favorites that when you go back home, you're like, I definitely got to check this place out?
Yeah, well back in Michigan, I know there's a couple of beers that I always try to get. One's called Poet, and I forget who makes it. I think New Holland Brewery.
Absolutely New Holland. That is a great beer.
Yeah, I love that. And there's Founders. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard of in Michigan as well. I think they're nationwide, because I can get it out here.
Oh, lovely.
They made something in Q4 called Frangelic Mountain, which I don't know what the heck that means, but man, it was delicious. It was just a great, great beer. So I was drinking that at Christmas time when I was home to see the family.
Well, you've had their breakfast out, right?
You know, I have, but I've got lactose issues. I think it's a milk stout, so I can't do the milk stouts, which is really even more trimming down of that. Usually the one thing they have from a stout perspective out here in California is a milk stout. So
right.
The one I thought I could have, I can't. So, you know, just give me a Newcastle or a Stella or a Guinness or something like that.
There you go. So have you had, speaking of Guinness, I still got to figure out a way to have Guinness sponsor the show just so I can get some free Guinness, and it's because it's fantastic. Have you had their specialty line of stouts? Have you seen these? It only comes in a case of 12, and there's four different. There's the 200th anniversary, the Antwerpen Stout, the Foreign Extra, and there's one other one that I forget. Have you seen this?
I haven't, but that sounds great.
So this is my networking karma that I'm giving to you. Whatever liquor store like that's got a good selection, ask them for it. Because I will say this, and I'm a huge Guinness fan. I've shared that my brother lives over in Ireland. Next time I can actually go visit, I will. And the Guinness there is amazing. But their Antwerpen Stout is my second favorite beer. Actually, it's my third favorite beer ever. But one of them, my set number two beer, unfortunately, the brewery went out of business. So I can't get that anymore. So Antwerpen Stout, number two. It's just amazing.
Nice. And I'll give you a couple out here too. There's a Ballast Point. They make a mocha porter at Christmas time in Q4. That's just awesome. I think it's like 10%. So you're not kidding around at that point.
Yeah.
So you're not drinking a lot of them, but that's really good. And there's a couple local ones here nearby me. If place called All American Brewery that has a good peanut butter porter.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, another place called Stereo that's got a good Scottish ale. I like the Scottish ales from time to time as well. So a couple of shout-outs for local places.
Absolutely. We'll make sure we get the links into the show notes as well. And in fact, I was thinking one of the beers I've been enjoying over this the past winter season was actually a California brewery, Lagunitas. They have a brewery here in Chicago now. They have for a couple of years, and they have an Imperial Porter, which is actually, an Imperial Stout, which is pretty tasty, but it's also a pretty, it's a high ABV. So that is a sipping on a cold evening kind of beer for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a few of those before as well. They make a brown ale that's pretty good too, but I think that's also 10% beer. So to your point, it's not a it's not an all night kind of party with those.
No. Sure. Is that the brown sugar?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Rob, we didn't even get a chance to talk about music, so we're going to have to apparently have another conversation, have you back on again. But sure. I think this sounds like a good place for us to kind of wrap things up. What is the best way for somebody to get a hold of you to follow up the conversation?
I mean, for me, typically LinkedIn. I usually spend 2-3 hours a day on there. It's, you know, honestly, from a business tool perspective, between LinkedIn and events, that's where we get 100% of our business for my company. So the events aren't happening as much as they used to, but it's interesting. True. Any kind of event is an event. Like this is an event. A podcast is an event. A webcast is an event.
Yep.
Any kind of interview, for example, or online publication, you can treat those and promote those from a business development perspective, just like any speaking engagement. So I encourage folks to do that. You know, start to talk with each other more in these types of conversations. It's a great way to build, you know, awareness for yourself, your brand, what you do, the value that you provide, and to get more direct to your question instead of rambling. LinkedIn. So Robert, first name, last name, Knop, K-N-O-P. I'm typically the first one that comes up. If I'm not, let me know. I'll be very upset about that. Find me on LinkedIn anytime, any day.
Sounds perfect. And we'll make sure we, of course, put that link in the show notes too. And one thing I do always ask all of my guests at the end of our show is, what's one tip you'd give to somebody to help them have a better day today?
Yeah, I mean, for today, you know, I would say little things make a big difference. You know, we'll use social media as an example. If you post something at a certain time of day versus another time of day, or one day of the week versus a different day of the week, or the hashtags that you use, or, you know, the title of your article, or the fact that it's in a negative spin or a positive spin, I mean, those things make a huge difference. And they seem like little things. It should be about the content, but, you know, all of those logistics make a really big difference, especially when you're working with something like social media. So a little tip for everyone today. Make sure you have those details ironed out.
Love it. Sometimes it's important to sweat the small stuff. Very cool. Well, and I also want to make sure to thank our sponsor, Urban Renewal Brewery. I have been enjoying, I mean, I should put this in the past tense. I enjoyed drinking their Schwarzweber Black Lager during my conversation with Rob. They are based out of the north side of Chicago in Ravenswood. And I know they're distributed throughout Chicago and a lot of Illinois. If you can't find them where you are at because you're not in Chicago, don't fret. Go and support your local brewery. I guarantee you that they'll have something that you like. And the reality is local craft breweries, they're small businesses. You know, they're trying to make things go in a tough environment, and they can appreciate all the help that you can give. So even just stopping by, even if you're sheltering in place, even if you can stop by and pick up a six pack or a growler at their tap room, or even at the grocery store. You know, I like the big beers. You know, I said I love Guinness, but we got to help everybody survive through this time. So go support your local brewery. Rob, thank you so much for being on with us today. I really appreciate our conversation. And to everybody, until we talk again, have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DeepFish a message on Twitter at DeepFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.